You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Another new episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast analysis of all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose with Sports Talk 790. For Thursday's show, live at Toyota Center, just before Thursday night's game between the Rockets and Pacers, I'm joined by a guy who's been around the Rockets for some time and is a staple at Toyota Center throughout the season. That's Matt Buller, the Rockets' lead television analyst, also, of course, former Rockets player. We've had him on the show before. It's been a few months since, well, Matt deserves an offseason, as busy as you are, but I'm glad to have you back. It feels like that we just talked because, you know, the season starts earlier than ever these days, and the Rockets played basically until June.
Yeah, it does feel like the summer was very short this year, but that's a good thing. And like you mentioned, the Rockets last year played all the way into the Western Conference Finals, all the way to a Game 7. And when you do get to the Western Conference Finals, the intensity of the series, you know, grows. And the crowd is awesome. And last year was really good up until Chris Paul pulled his hamstring. And then everybody was a little bit... disappointed the Rockets didn't go all the way last year. So that feeling of not making it all the way last year carried through the summer. And what I'm feeling now as we start this season, that this current team is really focused. They feel the pain from that loss last year, and they're excited about really making a push this year for the finals.
In today's show, we're going to be talking about, of course, the first preseason game, the opener. You just got back from Birmingham, but we are going to be looking forward a bit of a season preview, if you will. One of those guys you mentioned, Chris Paul, obviously the standout in game one, 26 minutes, 22 points, 9 assists, 5 steals, ridiculous, 5 of 6 from 3. What are the things you always worry about with a player of his age? And, you know, we talked about starting in early October, the injury factor. One reason why we're sitting here on October 4th, the NBA starts the season earlier than ever so that you don't have as many back-to-backs. In theory, that plays in the favor of older players like Chris Paul, like Carmelo Anthony. But when you're looking at a guy like Chris, who's 33 years old, and he got the big contract in the offseason, you always wonder in the back of your mind, is this the year that you're going to start to see a little bit of slippage, that father time creeps in? But boy, CP3 made a statement, it seemed like in game one, that he's not ready to let that happen. He looked very spry. I know he, you know, as you mentioned, everybody's kind of fueled by what happened to him in the Western Conference Finals, but of course, it's not going to last forever, but you're around the team a lot. It certainly doesn't feel like there's a vibe that he is any different than last season, or really any different than the prime of his career.
Yeah, that's a good observation, because Chris is in shape. He came into training camp this year ready to go. Looks like he's already in mid-season form. And I think that, you know, the way the season ended for him last year really drove him through this summer to be in the best shape that he could possibly be. And you mentioned he's 33 years old, and you know, back when I played 20 years ago, age seemed like guys got older quicker. But nowadays, with the way these guys are training, with the science that they're using, with the, you know, the way they're eating right and taking care of their bodies, Chris Paul, I think, this summer really made sure that when he came into the season this year, he was as good as he could possibly be. And, you know, as he gets older, hopefully he can continue to play at the same high level. And I expect that he can. Just from watching that first game, I was very impressed from what I saw. And you mentioned that the schedule in the NBA now is being spread out, so there's fewer back-to-backs. And with some of the guys that the Rockets added this summer, that gives them a little bit more depth. So I think Mike D'Antoni is going to be able to save Chris Paul here and there throughout the season, rest him a little bit, maybe play some of the other guys a little bit more, so that when the playoffs come around in the spring, Chris will be fresher and more ready to play an entire playoff round.
And if anything, you might get off to even a better start this year, because it's easy to forget, but this time last year, Chris had that fluke injury, that knee bump in the preseason with Mario Chalmers, I believe, in Memphis. And so he would basically miss, other than the Warriors opener, he missed the first 15 games of the year. Whereas if he gets through this preseason healthy, knock on wood, all of a sudden, for all the talk about the Rockets, it being so difficult to replicate the 65-17 regular season, if you have Chris Paul ready to go from game one, which is something they didn't have last year, maybe that's a margin that you can that you can build on that you didn't have this time a year ago.
Yeah, that's a great point. And last year, Chris Paul and James Harden only played 49 games together. You know, yep. So Chris did have a lot of injuries and James was out a little bit. And so out of those 49 games, the Rockets won 44 of those 49 games in the regular season. And their net rating in those games was a plus 13.6, which means that they were outscoring their opponent by 13.6 points per 100 possessions, which is just an astronomical number. So if Chris can stay healthy, you know, you don't want any of those fluke injuries, but you don't really have any control over those. But as long as Chris is healthy, we know James is a very durable player, and hopefully he'll stay healthy this year. And so hopefully those two guys will play more than 49 games together this season.
Yeah, and speaking of older players, we mentioned Chris Paul at 33. Another guy that's up there in age, at least by NBA terms, it's his good friend Carmelo Anthony. I know there's a lot that remains to be seen. He still hasn't gotten into his expected bench role because with PJ Tucker out with a sore back, Carmelo continues to start for the time being. But it remains to be seen exactly what a 34-year-old Carmelo Anthony has in the tank on both ends. How much defensively can he be an asset or at least not a huge liability in this scheme? That remains to be seen. But the thing that really stood out to me in that preseason opener, and I know you were there and got a courtside look at this, was that that my bad moment. When he took that 22-footer just inside the arc, not exactly a classic Daryl Morey or Mike D'Antoni shot, and to have the level of self-awareness, the level of humor to immediately recognize that, kind of laugh it off, to me, that's a different Carmelo Anthony than we saw, certainly his last year in New York, but even most of the year, I would say, in Oklahoma City, when it became clear that that marriage wasn't really working out the way they thought. So, again, physically, it's fair to question a 34-year-old Carmelo Anthony. He's not what he was in his true prime. But I think if you want to make an optimistic case, you could argue that even if he's lost a step physically, that maybe if he's in a better place mentally, that that can offset it to some degree. And at least in game one, he seems a lot happier. I know you travel with the team. What's the vibe that you see with Carmelo?
Yeah, and I was able to interview him after that first game, and he said that he is having fun playing basketball again. And to me, as a former player, that statement means a lot, because when you're playing on a team where you're not having fun, it's like the drudgery of a job, you know. But if you are on a team where you are having fun, where you enjoy playing with the other guys, where you're comfortable in your role, then that helps you be a more effective player. And last year, Carmelo Anthony was a very effective shooter last year. He was 37% on catch and shoot threes, which is better than average. And he was 42% on wide open threes last year, which is sky high. So he's going to get a lot of wide open threes this year when he's playing with James Harden and Chris Paul. So his role, I think, is going to be a lot easier on him, because he's going to be able to play off of the MVP, James Harden, going to be able to play off of the best point guard of our generation, Chris Paul. And so he's going to get a lot of wide open looks. He's going to get a lot of easy shots. And you mentioned that long two that he took, a pump fake at the three-point line and a one dribble inside the arc and knock down the long two, which is what Carmelo's been doing his entire career. So it's one of those things where it's hard to teach old dogs new tricks.
Yeah.
But this current Rockets team, and I know I talked to Mike D'Antoni a couple days ago, he said, this current Rockets team, what they're looking for is layups, free throws, and threes. And they want to eliminate all the long twos. They want to eliminate all the twos in the paint that are not layups. And so he said that, you know, they made that clear to everybody on the team, and everybody understands that they want to shoot fewer than six mid-range shots a game. And so that mid-range shot, when Carmelo made it, you know, he realized, oh, no, that's one of those shots I'm not supposed to take. And it was funny to see him kind of point to the bench and say, my bad. And that's important for him to kind of feel comfortable to be able to do that. So just in the first game, I think what we've seen from Carmelo is a good start.
Transitioning beyond the big names, obviously those being CP and Carmelo, one guy that really stood out off, you mentioned the depth earlier, is Michael Carter-Williams. 5-6, 19 points, got the line 11 times, made 9 of those. And this whole offseason, since they added Michael Carter-Williams, the big question has been, can he shoot? Can they get that shot to even a somewhat passable level, to where he's not dreadful for his career, he's a 25% shooter? Can you bump that up to maybe 30%, where he's slightly below average? And so, you know, he's kind of been downplayed, you know, even though he was a minimum signing, just like James Ennis. At the same time, there's a higher expectations for Ennis because he's, you know, kind of that 3-and-D guy, potential replacement for Trevor Ariza. And all of that, I think, is justified. The hype around James Ennis, we didn't see him much in the preseason opener, only played 19 minutes due to fouls. We'll talk more about that in just a few moments. But Michael Carter-Williams, he's been a bit under the radar. And, you know, one of the reasons people are high on James Ennis is you can make the argument that in Houston, it allows you to play to your strengths if you're a role player. Because there's such an infrastructure in place, the playmakers, the scoring, that James Ennis can really focus on, you know, his defense, transition game. Well, what's interesting to me with Michael Carter-Williams, you know, this whole offseason, a lot of us debated, can he shoot well enough? Well, in game one, he barely had to shoot at all, in terms of jumpers. Now, he just went to the lane, and even though the Grizzlies are a decent defensive team, let's not make them out to be, you know, the Jazz, the Warriors in the playoffs. It's game one of the preseason. Let's be honest about that. But I guess what I'm wondering is that, you know, while you can make a case defensively that the infrastructure would benefit of James Ennis, can you not also make a case that offensively it might make a Michael Carter-Williams, it might make it easier for him to play to his strengths in Houston, to where, you know, he can slash, he can get to the rim, whereas in Charlotte a year ago, not having that level of talent around him, it makes him, you know, it kind of plays up his weaknesses, if you will. So just talk about how the Houston system might make it a little bit easier for Carter-Williams on offense to kind of, you know, minimize the importance of that outside shot.
Yeah, so let's go back to what Mike D'Antoni told his team before this season. We want layups, free throws, and threes. And Michael Carter-Williams can get to the to the rim, and that's been his strength his whole career. And he can get to the free throw line. He got 11 free throws in that first game. Those are the two most effective shots you can come by. Now, he's not a good three-point shooter, and so when the ball does come to him and he's wide open at the three-point line, we saw it twice in that first game. Instead of shooting it, he took that wide open space to drive into the lane and create something. So you have James Harden to create. You have Chris Paul to create. You have Eric Gordon who can create. Now you've got Michael Carter-Williams who can create as well. And so there's so many different ways to attack a defense, and you get to your fourth guy and it's Michael Carter-Williams, he can attack. That's great.
And the other thing I would think is that, you know, Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, James Harden, they can all space the floor. They can shoot. I mean, even, you know, Marquise Chris, who right now is kind of your backup five, you know, even he has some three-point ability. So I think, you know, if you have that level of spacing all over the floor, maybe that makes it a little bit easier for, you know, for Michael Carter-Williams to slash, easier than, say, you know, when he's in Charlotte and you've got a more traditional big, Dwight Howard, you know, all of a sudden that comes it up where he's not getting those driving lanes.
Exactly. And, you know, old school basketball, the lane's all clogged up. Well, the Houston Rockets, the lane is not all clogged up. It's wide open. So Michael Carter-Williams is going to find a lot of space to drive. And so I expect that he'll be able to fit in as a secondary or third ball handler, creator on the offensive end. But I think on the defensive end, he also helps out because, you know, he's been a point guard his whole year, his whole career, but he's 6'5", 6'6", with long arms. So Mike D'Antoni's going to play him as a wing player, and he's another one of those guys on the defensive scheme that can switch everything and guard everybody. So I think he's going to be very effective.
The comparison I've seen, and it's very premature, we're talking right before the second game of the preseason, but a lot of folks on Twitter, they look at his long frame and they wonder about Sean Livingston, who's a guy who profiles somewhat similarly, at least in terms of his physical body stature, out in Golden State. And of course, that's, we're getting way ahead of ourselves this early. That said, it is kind of, you can see a path to where, you know, you think back to what made Livingston what he is in Golden State. He wasn't that player until he got that infrastructure around him. You know, he's a guy, now he came through a lot in terms of his own personal injury history, and that kind of stunted his development, I think. But also, I don't think Sean Livingston would be the player he is if he were somewhere else. So while I don't think, you know, it's not fair to put that level of expectation, especially after just one or two preseason games, on Michael Carter-Williams, at the same time, that's kind of the dynamic I think of, is maybe this is a player, just like you see Livingston in Golden State, who outperforms his, you know, kind of career norms because he has that supporting cast around him.
And that's a good point that you make. And Mike D'Antoni said to me before the season, he said he wants everybody on the team to have a career year. That's his goal, is that he wants every player to have a career year. Michael Carter-Williams is now in a spot where he might be in the right situation where he can have a career year. And also the other thing about Michael Carter-Williams is he is a point guard. So he is sort of a backup point guard where if one of the Rockets point, let's say Chris Paul has an injury or Chris Paul needs a rest, you've got a legit NBA backup point guard to take up some of those minutes to help, you know, extend Chris Paul's season where he's not totally worn out in stretches. So having Michael Carter-Williams and his versatility is very important on this roster.
Before we transition to our favorite segment, I saved it for the end, our talk about the officials. I do want to ask you about other brackets beyond just Michael Carter-Williams off that bench. Just curious if there's anybody else you're looking at as far as the depth that you're paying attention to this preseason. For example, we're recording this before the Pacers game, so if something dramatically changes tonight to change the calculus, then stay tuned for tomorrow's episode. But going into tonight, Clint Capela is doubtful, and I'm guessing that means you're going to get a lot of Marquese Chris. He's interesting for a lot of reasons. Clearly, the backup five spot isn't settled. They also have to make a decision by October 31st on his year four option. But he's a guy that, to me, is kind of worth monitoring in the preseason because he's going to get some run, especially with Capela and Tucker battling some injuries. Just curious, when you look down the bench, is there anybody that's not, you know, an obvious rotation player already that you're kind of keeping an eye on in these remaining four preseason?
Yeah, and I think the depth on the roster this season for the Rockets is much better than it was last year. Mm. And I think when the Rockets go to their second unit this year, the second unit for the Rockets is going to blow other teams' second units right off the floor. So let's say James and Chris and the starters get off to a 15-point lead, and then you put in the second unit, and the second unit just extends the lead. That's going to make the season much easier on everyone else because the Rockets have so much depth. And we talked a little bit about James Ennis, who I think is going to be like a younger Trevor Ariza, plays with a lot of energy, maybe plays with more energy than Trevor Ariza did since Trevor is getting a little bit older. So even though Trevor Ariza's loss was a big loss for the Rockets, I think James Ennis is going to be able to fill that role. Okay. And then let's talk, Michael, about Marquese Chris. Marquese Chris was the third youngest player in NBA history to get 100 blocks, 100 steals, and 100 made threes. The two guys that did it quicker than he did, LeBron James and Kevin Durant. So that's where Marquese Chris is as a young player. He's got a lot of potential. He was in a bad situation in Phoenix his first 2 years. No direction, no defined role, just out there playing games where he knew he was going to lose. So I think Marquese Chris come to the Rockets now where he has a defined role to play just like Clint Capela does, possibly make some corner threes if those open up, but just play with energy, defend the rim, get rebounds, look for the lobs. I think simplifying Marquese Chris's role here with the Rockets is going to help him be a better player, but it also, I think, is going to make the Rockets better because now they've got two guys that they can play above the rim in Capela and Chris.
You mentioned James Ennis a couple of times. He was limited to, I think, 19 minutes because of foul trouble, and that was a constant theme throughout. Even though Rockets won by 16 points, there were a lot of individuals. We talked about Chris Paul, talked about Michael Carter-Williams that stood out. It was not exactly an aesthetically pleasing game because of what happened with the fouls. And a lot of it was the freedom of movement. There was some extracurricular. We saw Chris Paul and Haywood Workman get into it a little bit. But the freedom of movement, that's a new emphasis this year. So you got a front row seat, and I know y'all also are part of the broadcast meetings, that kind of stuff. Is this something, to the extent we saw in Birmingham, the first game against Memphis, is that something, that level of attention to it, that you think will continue into the regular season? Or is it to some extent exaggerated the preseason because they're trying to break players of that habit, if you will? Because if it continues to that extent, we could be in for some really long basketball games.
Yeah, exactly. And so the freedom of movement emphasis this year means that you really can't grab a hold of offensive players anymore. You got to let them be able to move freely throughout the offense. And the NBA every year, they have a point of emphasis. Mm-hmm. And the officials always in the preseason overcall it to try to break that habit.
Yeah.
You know, and so I like the new rule of freedom of movement. I like that as an offensive player, you can't get grabbed, you can't get held, that you will be able to move freely. And I think that will help the Rockets on the offensive end when they can move freely without all that holding and grabbing. But on the defensive side of it, with the Rockets last year going to a switching defense, where their mantra last year was see it, talk it, grab it, switch it. Well, now they can't grab it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, they've got to see it, they've got to talk it, they can touch it, but they can't grab it, and then they got to switch it. So all the defensive players in the league are really going to have to change the way they play defense. You can't grab a hold of anybody anymore. And I think the Rockets will be able to adjust. But what we saw in the first preseason game was a ton of foul calls. I expect that to continue even into the early part of the season. I think they're going to be calling it very, very close. So the players have to adjust. Mm. And I think once the players do adjust, then the entire game is going to benefit with more movement on the offensive end.
One of the takes that I've seen is that it might be a little bit of a disadvantage to the Rockets, and I understand superficially why, because you look at the Rockets last year, we know they were one of the league's more isolation-heavy teams, and so it's easy to draw the conclusion to say, you know, while in theory it should benefit everyone to some degree, will it give a competitive advantage to teams that aren't the Rockets because there's more movement? That said, when I think about it more, I think the counter to that is that it's not like the Rockets are trying to be an isolation-heavy team. It's just kind of a byproduct of, you know, the initial action, often a high pick and roll. Teams switch against what the Rockets try to do because they have so many playmakers, and so isolation is just kind of the, you know, the byproduct. It's not what Mike D'Antoni is trying to do. So while certainly there's an adjustment curve for the Rockets on the defensive end, like you talked about, at the same time, it's not like offensively they just go out there looking for isolation. So in theory, it should benefit them because, you know, a lot of those screens that last year when teams switched, we know there's, you know, a lot of bumping, a lot of grabbing. We know there's that motion away from the ball. In theory, the Rockets should be able to benefit from that as well, should they? Because, again, it's not like they're trying to go out there playing isolation basketball. There is movement, and if the officials call it level on both ends, then the Rockets, I mean, they should benefit as much as they take a hurting from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you mentioned that the Rockets are a very heavy isolation team, and that's actually not a bad thing, because the Rockets last year were one of the all-time best isolation teams in NBA history, and James Harden's points per possession in isolation is among the all-time greats. So Mike D'Antoni actually joked to me the other day, he goes, we ought to just run isolation every single time because it's it's one of our best, most efficient plays because they have James Harden and Chris Paul. But I think you're going to see more isolation play in the NBA as more teams go to the switching defense. Because most, you know, old school defenses, you would use three guys to cover two and then you'd have to rotate. Mm-hmm. Well, now teams have realized that when you have to commit that extra defender, then that opens up a three-point shot. And they don't want to open up three-point shots against the Rockets because that's what the Rockets are trying to get.
Right.
So there's going to be a lot more switching in the NBA. And when you switch, then that means there's going to be mismatches. And so that's where the isolation game comes in, is when James Harden has a mismatch, he's got a big on him, he's just going to torch that big every single time. And that's where the Rockets have an advantage over every other team, is because in the NBA going forward, with all these switches, with all the switches now, the Rockets have the right personnel to be able to attack that.
Yep. Folks, he's Matt Bullard. Follow him on Twitter at Bull50. And, of course, you can listen to him throughout the season on the TV broadcast, Rockets lead analyst, AT&T Sportsnet Southwest. Matt, thanks so much for the time.
Always fun, Ben. Let's do it a lot this season.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thanks to you for joining us. And, well, thanks to all of you guys for listening. If you want more from me in the interim, you can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose and the show on Twitter at Locked on Rockets. Until next time, that will be tomorrow when we're recapping whatever happens tonight against the Pacers. I will sign off. Have a good evening and stay tuned for more coverage right here at Locked on Rockets, your home for podcast analysis of Houston Rockets basketball.